watches and listens. We must seize the hour. We must seize the hour. We must seize the hour. We must seize the hour.
Richard Nixon's landmark visit to China in 1972 may seem like an odd subject to sing about, but John Adams' opera, Nixon in China, is a stunning interpretation of that historic event and has become something of a modern-day classic since it was first mounted in 1987. It's being revived or premiered at the Metropolitan Opera House and played to rave reviews. Two more performances are scheduled through this next Friday, the 19th, and joining us now are James Madaleno, who plays Richard Nixon, and Janice Kelly, who plays Pat Nixon. I'm very pleased that it brings both of them to our show today. Hello.
Thank you. Hello.
Hi, nice to be here.
Is there any particular part of Richard Nixon's historic 1972 visit to China that you think made it particularly good material for an opera?
Well, I mean, the whole event was a really historic event. I mean, no American president had ever visited China. We really knew nothing about China. And I think Peter Sellers sort of put it very well, where he said, you know, part of it was sort of a crass political gambit, because you get to dominate primetime TV for a whole crucial week before an election. And in a sense, nothing happened, but everything happened. It was the beginning of the China, you know, we see now in our relationship with it.
And the thing is that we get to see the diplomatic talks in the opera, which they didn't really, the media weren't allowed into these meetings. And that's why I think Pat Nixon got so much press, because they followed her around when she went to visit the schools and the
Of course, all of that is imagined. We're not getting the record of those discussions from Alice Goodman's libretto.
Oh, well, they are using word for word
actually,
some of it, aren't
they,
Jim?
The mouse scene, a lot of the mouse scene is actually verbatim, because it was taken down by Mao's secretary.
So some of this is really just transcript?
Yes.
Is that harder to sing than some of the other things where she has written octosyllabic couplets, rhymed octosyllabic.
Well,
even the verbatim
discussion is poeticized by her and made into couplets.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have you originated the role of Richard Nixon 20 years ago. How does it feel to come back to it?
It's always great to come back, because you come back to it with more information that has come out over the years about all the characters. And Nixon is a fascinating character. There's just so much there. And the piece is such, Alice Goodman's libretto, it's every time you do it, you can just go a little deeper into it, because there's just so much there.
Well, that's the sort of thing actors say. But part of what's so effective here is that the two of you are such good actors. And James, you look perfect in the role today. Have you grown into the part? You're probably closer now to what the age that Nixon was than you were when you first performed this.
I think I'm about 3 years younger than Nixon was when he went to China.
Because I really felt at times like it was a real Nixon up there singing. You've also caught the way he moves. And there is a problem in portraying Nixon, isn't there? Because we have Nixon, the real person, and Nixon, the caricature.
Well, I try never to get into caricature. And, I mean, that was something that we tried to avoid studiously from the beginning, because, a caricature is funny, you know, a couple of times, but we wanted something that was going to be lasting. So, you know, I never put my hands above my head.
Although,
you know,
he did do those things.
Not in China, he didn't. But we really tried to avoid those sort of stock gestures that, Rich Little and you know, was so popular at the time.
Well, we've gotten a laugh anyway. I'm not sure you wanted to play this for laughs.
No. We really take this deadly seriously. And that's where the humor can come in, because, I mean, Nixon is a comic character in some place, but only the comedy is that he is so serious.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's also a fish out of water in mm-hmm. much of this.
A bit, but you know, he was actually, it's been great doing it here because we've got to meet some of the people who were actually there. And, I'm just blanking on his name right now. It's embarrassing, but.
Well, who was there?
The man who, you know, the pictures that you see of the Mao scene, to the right of Henry Kissinger in these pictures that's always cut out, was this gentleman. Mm-hmm. And I mean,
an American translator?
No, he was a diplomat. Mm-hmm. And he said that Nixon was the best prepared president that he's ever worked with. So, I mean, Nixon was extremely well prepared.
Jenny, how do you prepare for a role?
Janice,
I'm sorry.
Yes, okay.
Pat Nixon.
Well, I've been doing it over a 10-year period. I've done it 3 times now. And each time, as Jimmy says, you have the opportunity to go even deeper into the layer. I mean, the way a woman holds herself in that period when, you know, to be a professional woman wasn't so much the norm. Somebody who supported her husband no matter what, very stoic and smiling. What gave me the opportunity to dig deeper was the fact that John and Peter and Alice opened up another world which showed her vulnerability and her strength, you know, those opposite things, but in a way that I think she made a big contribution to what happened in China.
Did you read biographies?
Yes.
Look at news footage?
Yes, I read Julie's biography, and now there's lots on YouTube. I loved listening to her conversations, her tapes with Dick, where she talked like this, a little bit lower than I do, and say, uh-huh, Dick.
Well, you get to hit some very high notes.
Yeah, but on the other hand, it was great to have that color of her voice. It helped me characterize who she was.
In Act Two, we get a fuller exploration of her character. Anthony Tomasini, writing the New York Times Review, said, in Mr. Adams' tender music, as sung by Miss Kelly, you sense Mrs. Nixon wistfully pondering the much different life she might have had.
Yes.
Do you think that Pat Nixon had reservations about the life she was thrust into as First Lady, married to this troubled man?
I believe she didn't like politics at all, but she stood by him. There was a time in her life when she said, no, that's enough, Dick, we're going to stop. And then when the last election came out, she says, well, if we're going to do it, we're going to win. So I think, you know, but in this opera, she is an emotional equal to him and not just a foil.
But also, in a way, contrasted with Madame Mao, Chang Qing, who is a political wife, but of a very different sort.
Scary woman.
Proactive political wife.
In fact, wound up being punished as the leader of the Gang of Four.
Yes.
Now, Nixon hated modern art. In a memo to H.R. Haldeman, he once wrote, those who are on the modern art and music kick are 95% against us anyway. I refer to the recent addicts of Leonard Bernstein and the whole New York crowd. When I compare the monstrosity of Lincoln Center with the Academy of Music in Philadelphia, I realize how decadent the modern art and architecture have become. So is there any irony in the fact that there is this modern opera about him at Lincoln Center right now?
I have no idea. I've never heard that quote. That is really fascinating.
But not surprising.
Well, you know, these East Coast intellectuals, they were the bane of Richard Nixon's, you know, existence. And, you know, no matter what Richard Nixon did, he felt underappreciated. He didn't think anybody, you know, appreciated all the hard work he did. Yeah, I don't know. That's a very funny quote, though.
Well, all I know is that Trisha Nixon really enjoyed herself
when she
came.
She did.
Trisha Nixon came backstage?
She came.
Yes, and she loved it.
It was a joy to meet her and her family.
Yeah.
I'd imagine the only person alive today who might have a negative feeling is Henry Kissinger. Mm. He doesn't come across in the most favorable light. And several critics have even complained that out of all the characters, Kissinger gets the most unfair treatment. Do you think he does?
Yes, but I understand why, too. I mean, you know.
I've met Henry Kissinger, and I don't think it was all that unfair.
Well, you know, it depends. I don't want to get too political, though. But I mean, there's certainly a lot more to Henry Kissinger than the sort of. But you know, we have to have a Buffo character in the.
To be a baddie.
Because this is also opera, and Janice, is singing this kind of modern opera different from singing the classical repertoire?
Of course, it is different. But for me, as long as music allows or demands that I sing as best I can. And I find that John's music, although it's lyrically, is very lyric, but it does leap around. It has great leaps. I have to sing well, keep grounded, keep supported, and make the best sound I possibly can. And in that way, I think it stands up with the greats.
Well, in Italian opera, you have an aria that's the equivalent of a song. Mm. Some of them are almost pop songs, and you don't have that to fall back on here.
Oh, there are quite a number of arias. I mean, Janice has one of the most beautiful arias. This is prophetic in the second half of her scene at the top of Act Two. Mm-hmm. Joe and Lai has. Two of the great arias in the show. His last soliloquy, I think, is the most beautiful music in the entire opera.
And your arias are now being done as audition pieces.
That's right, the news aria. Yeah.
It's a very famous thing for students to take to auditions.
Well, throughout the score, we can hear hints of rock music, of American big band music, especially when Richard and Pat Nixon are on stage.
Yeah. There are these four saxes in the texture of the orchestra that is just so brilliant. You know, John's father, much like my father had a dance band. He was a jazz musician, trumpet player, and John's father.
What did you go wrong?
Well,
I'm joking.
I discovered
but
the organ
music. But it
sounds
to me like you would have been doing something quite different.
I got a job singing at a church when I was in high school and with a fantastic organist who would play these big Bach preludes and fugues, and I heard this music, and it was like a religious convergence, and I said, okay, I want to do this.
Nixon in China opens with Air Force One dropping onto the stage, and it's a really dazzling piece of theater. Did Peter Sellers maintain many of the original elements from the 1987 staging?
Yeah, I think the physical show is pretty much unchanged, but what always changes with Peter is the relationships of the people on stage. We just go deeper and deeper every time. Peter.
Well, it's almost choreographed, and we're not talking about the Mark Morris choreography.
No, but
there's just so much wonderful movement that it's kind of like, it's dazzling at times.
Yeah, the thing about Peter that makes him unusual is that most directors, after they mount something the first time, or the, you know, it'll be, if it's co-commissioned, you know, it'll be three or four venues, and then they turn it over to an assistant. And the assistant knows the physicality of the show, but oftentimes you lose why you're doing what you're doing because the assistant has it written down. But Peter always comes to remount these things. He's continuously working on this piece for 23 years.
Well, since we know things that we didn't know in 1987,
exactly.
Did you discuss the relationship between the various characters?
Well. We more tapes come out, more Nixon tapes. Mao's doctor wrote a tell-all book about the secret life of Chairman Mao, which was really shocking.
Peter had dinner with someone one night who had been there, and the next day he came into rehearsals. He said, okay, he said, I was shaken up a little bit about how he said it. And we reworked some of our scene in Act Three because of that. So always open.
There is a line where Chairman Mao sings, "Our plunge into the New York Stock Exchange will line some pockets here and there." I don't know if that was written after China had already.
No, that was written in 1987. And that's what's so amazing about great artists and poets. It's like they're prophets. And everything that Alice wrote in 1987 is, you know, none of that had happened, and it's all come to pass now.
Well, the world as we know it was kind of created on this trip. This is a rarity, an opera that's based on a real historic event. I can't think of too many others that were, but this is an important moment in history because I think we can say that as far as the world we live in today, there was the before the opening of China mm-hmm. and yes. the post-opening mm-hmm. of China. Yeah. And now China today was declared the second largest economy in the world. Mm-hmm. That would not have happened without this.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's actually a very sort of stock operatic theme, East meets West. And the thing that's so great about it is because it really makes opera a living art form, which Mozart tried to do with his Da Ponte operas, because it was about the people in the audience and about people that they knew and that they could identify with.
Although we have had East meets West before with Madame Butterfly.
Yeah, Julius Caesar.
There's a kind of Greek tragedy to him, the character of Nixon as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's all
But this is also an event where not much happened. I mean, everything that's important happened afterward.
As a result, but, exactly.
This is, there's an awful lot of just, in the real event, of standing around and shaking hands.
Yeah.
And no real agreements were made other than that we would establish diplomatic relations.
And that was the beginning of everything, yeah.
In Act Two, the Nixons attend a propaganda play that is choreographed by Mark Morris. I don't know how close it is to the what was really done at the time, but it's the ballet, the Red Detachment of Women.
I saw a clip of the real ballet this morning on something that was sent to me, and the costumes are very similar. The actual, I could see absolutely where Mark Morris, of course he's brought it up with his own fantastic
Mark says that he saw the Red Detachment mm-hmm. of Women and a couple of the other of Chang Ching's ballets when he was 16. And so he choreographed this from the memory of, of course, Mark's really a genius.
He is, indeed.
And he has brilliant dancers doing it as well.
Oh,
but
incredible.
The Nixons become part of the play mm-hmm. within the play. Mm-hmm. That, I don't think, happened.
No, did not happen.
Pat Nixon, sympathizing with the victim in that play, winds up actually intruding into the performance.
But I guess that's where the fantasy takes over and you see that what she might have wanted to do actually played out in real life.
I mentioned that not much happened, and that is pretty much what the third act is about, isn't it? It's people talking about what they would hope would come out of this.
Well,
I think it stirs up the past, though, as well, reminiscences. In our relationship, what you see is the two individuals, what they were going through when Nixon was at the Pacific and when Pat was at home for a whole year on her own, and the disturbance and maybe some, you know, real kind of look at themselves from a whole, mortality point of view.
Yeah, I think it's just reflecting on our lives and, you know, what did anything we do matter, mm-hmm. you know, it's that sort of moment. Joe and Lai sort of sums it up in his how much of what we did was good. You know, everything seems to move beyond our remedy. So that's...
Over the course of your career, how much singing have you done in English?
I've done quite a lot. I've done Showboat, Street Scene, and works by other contemporary composers. David Soar, one about plastic surgery, which I just did for Opera North.
An opera on plastic surgery?
Yes, yes. We haven't got time to go into that. Quite a lot. And I think it's important that it happens. And, you know, especially I think the prose and Benjamin Britten, Mifanwy Piper, who wrote for The Turn of the Screw, and Alice Goodman, I have to put up there as the best.
And also at E&O, all the operas are done in English still, right?
They are, except we did Satyagraha in Sanskrit. That's the only exception.
Is it different? Of course, you understand the meaning of all the words, but I assume that when you sing in Italian or German or any other language that you know what you're singing.
Yes,
of course,
you have to.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
Is English harder or easier to sing in?
I think it's about the same. You know, it's just different.
It's just
techniques.
Important to make it sound as best it can. And, you don't do it. Well, I don't do much different. I just, you need to sing the vowels and connect with the consonants and get the right thoughts in your head.
Well, Nixon in China has been staged all over the world since its premiere with you in 1987. The LA Times noted that in one, quote, preposterous German staging, a topless Madame Mao ran off with Nixon on Air Force One.
I want to see that one sometime.
I thought you wanted to be in it.
Sure, that sounds pretty good.
But can you take those kinds of liberties? What are the things that we have is a sense that, to a large degree, this is what it must have looked like? Obviously, we're taking some liberties. Not everybody, not all the Chinese are really Chinese. And a lot of the dialogue is invented, but still, you have a feeling that that there's, you know, that this is kind of based on a real historic event.
Yes, but it's not a documentary. That's the main thing to me.
But there's no topless Madame Mao in this version.
No,
there's other sex things happen.
And running off with Nixon, that is just way out of character.
I said that last performance is on Friday. I think it's Saturday, isn't it?
Saturday. We've got one on Tuesday and then one on
Saturday
the
night.
19th. Yeah.
Now, would it be possible to do opera the way you do musical comedy, where you just would do 2 weeks of performance?
I don't think I could sing 8 shows a week of this.
But you're mic'd. It's not the same as if you were doing
No,
we
you
singing
have to sing,
any differently.
You have to sing exactly the same way. It's not like we're crooning.
They're not using the mics to make us fill the hall. It's only an ambience amplification to mix in with the orchestral instruments.
Mm-hmm. And it just would be too wearing on the voice?
Yeah.
Oh, you could do it. I could do it 3 times, maybe 4 times. But you couldn't continue that over months.
2 shows on Wednesday and Saturday. I don't think so.
And then you just rest up between. You wouldn't sing another role.
No. You might be rehearsing something else quietly during the day, which I'm doing at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And do you know what you're going to be doing in the next 2 or 3 years? Do you have, like so many opera singers, do you have your life pretty much laid out?
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
How much more Nixon in China?
That I don't know. Oh, well, no, that's not true. I'm doing a production that was premiered in Vancouver. We're doing it in Kansas City in 2012.
Yeah. Now, the sets are quite spectacular. Would they the same sets be shipped to Vancouver?
No, it's a completely
so this
different
is it.
Yeah, and likewise,
the Met just puts it away. And hopes that
maybe they'll bring it back.
They may bring it back. Yeah,
it's so beautifully done, and they've redone all the costumes and made us, you know, tip top. So hopefully there might be another chance.
Well, it is premiering here, and there's a feeling that at an earlier time that might not have happened. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the Met is changing?
I think Peter Gelb really is serious about making opera a living art form, you know, and not just something that from 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, both of you, this is your debut at the Met, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
How does it compare to other opera houses from the singing point of view?
Well, I mean, I have to say, it's been the high point of my career. You know, it's something that you dream of as a singer, to be able to come to the Met. And been welcomed beautifully by everybody in the chorus and, you know, the management and Peter Gelb. So I've had a wonderful time.
That's what's wonderful. The support system here is really quite extraordinary. And
the audiences, because I remember being in Milan and seeing people going to La Scala. Unfortunately, I wasn't going that night. But they all had these huge smiles on their faces. You knew that they felt that they were doing something special.
Yeah. Of course, in Italy, the audience oftentimes gets involved during the show, which fortunately they don't. It's not the custom in this country, but everybody's a critic in Italy.
But I've been to see 5 operas since I've been here, and the buzz in the audience is amazing, really. People do love the event and the building.
We actually have an aria of Chairman Mao singing. The founders come first.
Mm.
Unfortunately, neither of you are singing that, but it will give us a sense of the range of the music sung by Robert Brubaker.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's in our cast.
And I want to thank the two of you so much for being with us. Janice Kelly, soprano, who is Pat Nixon and does embody the role of Pat Nixon, and James Medellina, who is the baritone who sings the Richard Nixon part and not only looks like Richard Nixon, but I think that if Richard Nixon sang, he'd probably sound a bit like him.
Well, that's
John's. We can only hope.
That's John's writing. He really captured it so brilliantly.
Yeah. Nixon in China at the Metropolitan Opera. Thank you so much for being with us.
Pleasure.
My pleasure. Bye.
Founders come first.